Hi, this is Scott with the Android Guys podcast. I'm sitting here today with John. John, it's February, and that means we have maybe another couple of months before we start to see the next release of Android, at least formally introduced, shown off perhaps at Google I.O., but right now it's all rumors, speculation, and early preview stuff is probably going to drop in the next couple of weeks or so.
Is there any preview items you'd want to mention? Maybe just something that sounds interesting?
For Android 10 or Android Q, whatever it happens to be officially.
Right.
Yes and no, but that might be another discussion we can do for a future episode. What I'm thinking today is we could go back in time and look at the history of Android releases and talk about some of the things that have come about over the last decade or so as they were rolled out by Google and added to phones at a platform level. So a lot of devices we've seen over the years will perhaps feature a hardware or software feature or option in the device, or introduce something that's, hey, that's really cool and that's a good reason to buy this phone. But a year later maybe, or you know, a generation or so down the road, that might be on all devices. What happens sometimes is Google will just kind of bake that support right into the platform and make it available for pretty much anybody that wants to make phones. Sometimes it's sensors somebody will put in a device and take advantage of some kind of really cool technology. It's nice, it's awesome, but then, you know, a year or two later, that's not so special anymore and it's kind of standardized. And sometimes that gets lost on people. I know people take things for granted, especially if they're, you know, just in the last couple of years getting into their first smartphone. They don't realize some of the trouble that we dealt with in the past and things that we did without. It is interesting when you think about, you know, kids today don't have any idea what it was like when we were young and what the struggle was like in a device. And, you know, back in our day, we didn't even have that in our phone. So I think it would be fun to kind of revisit and walk from basically the first release all the way back to 2008, really. So
that sounds really good.
You've been there since then. You were there with the first Android phone, and you had played around with phones and sold them. You know, we worked together, so we knew what it was like pre-smartphone and what it was like to see introduced that, you know, you could carry around in your pocket and kind of revolutionize the way we use our devices and the way we perform business and our daily tasks and the way we live socially and interact. So we've been through that for, you know, 10, 11 years. And so let's go back in our time machine to all the way back to Android 1.0. And that was going to be 2008. You remember this. It feels a lot closer.
It does. It doesn't feel like it's that long ago to remembering when reading about the G Phone, the rumors of Android, what was the possibilities and options, and speculating about those seems like it wasn't
in just a few years ago.
Yeah.
So at the time, Apple had just come out with their phone, the iPhone, and you know, this was 2007, and Google, there were rumors starting to circulate that they were going to maybe do their own phone or do something that was, you know, a potential so-called iPhone killer. But we ended up finding out that they had a software platform, Android, and they were going to work with a bunch of different companies and develop an ecosystem and software that they can basically give away to anybody who wants to use that. And the promise of, you know, the hive mind, more people working together collectively, was going to kind of raise the whole space.
Yeah, I think it's similar to the Microsoft model. where Microsoft uses the software, but a lot of partners makes the hardware.
Right.
And it's allowed them to have a much larger adoption. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I think that model was a really good idea and still is today.
And going open source didn't cost anybody any money to say, hey, we're going to try that. We're going to put it on our devices. We don't have to pay to license that. So 2008, we're looking at the T-Mobile G1, the first phone ever to run Android. It was exclusive to T-Mobile, HTC. So this launched and brought about a whole different world of what you could do with your phone. You know, at the time, it was a web browser on a 3.5-inch screen in your pocket, email. It was the first time we saw the ability to watch YouTube in your pocket.
Right.
Something that we do routinely. Like, that just, it was a big deal that, you know, in 2008, you could watch YouTube or pull up Google Maps and see things, you know, even with a street view. You know, they were at that time starting to take pictures of major roads and cities to kind of see what the address looked like if you were traveling somewhere, you knew what the house might look like or the business. We also had Android Market, which at the time, you know, this is today is the Google Play Store.
Yeah.
But it was the Android Market, and it was where people could go to get their apps. And do you remember the huge selection?
Right. It was pretty bare bones in the beginning.
There were dozens of apps, and that was really interesting to have a place that you can go directly on your device and see these apps and to look at all of these interesting things that each had its own target demographic or use case, or had some kind of interesting thing that you could do because of the hardware that was in your pocket. Do you remember anything specifically? I mean, the G1, obviously, it was a touch display. But for those listening who don't remember, what else was special about that device?
Well, it slid off to the side to reveal a full keyboard. Mm-hmm. And so you could have a full screen size. So the size of the device was a screen. Mm-hmm. Unlike the BlackBerries at the time, where it was half screen, half keyboard. That was a really nice feature at the time, had a little roller ball, very easy to get through. And I remember with Android at the time, it was really interesting to have the application launcher. Mm-hmm. So you could scroll up from the bottom. It looked way different, just like that little gray rectangle. But to be able to scroll up from the bottom and to have all your apps and then cleanly and neatly put shortcuts on your desktop wherever you want them.
Right.
Which was a huge departure from like the Windows OS versions or the mobile, I forget what they call it, but Microsoft's mobile platform at the time. Mm-hmm. And even iOS, where, you know, they were in the early stages as well, and there's very little customization for apps. And it was a very nice feel like you could really customize mm-hmm. that screen and that device.
Well, it was, you know, a few months before we saw other hardware. And it was a device that was, you know, available in a couple of different colors, black, white, and like a gray. It certainly wasn't sleek or sexy, but it had a lot of promise. But I think it really spoke to a lot of nerds and early adopters of cool tech.
Right.
You know, the reviews at the time, it wasn't that the device was overly praised. If anything, people criticized it because it had too many forms of input. There was also a trackball.
Yes.
So for navigation, if you wanted to scroll from, you know, if you're on a web browser and you want to scroll down, you can actually use the trackball. And I think it was everything that the iPhone wasn't at the time. Everybody praised that thing for this, you know, beautiful device that was also very polished UI compared to Android.
Yeah.
But we started to see different devices, you know, in the couple of months after that, where T-Mobile came out with their next phone, the MyTouch 3G, And then we started to get other devices from Sprint and other hardware manufacturers over the next year or so. So let's jump through some of the major updates that we saw. And keep in mind, as we talk about these, this is not exhaustive. If you go to Wikipedia and look up the Android version history, you're going to see way more things than we talk about here. This could take us hours to go through if we touched on things that were monumental. But what we'll do here is just kind of discuss some of the things that were introduced along the way that gives us the experience that we have today, or laid the groundwork for what we have, and a lot of stuff that we take for granted and or look back on and say, wow, it's hard to remember a time where we didn't have that. Or it's interesting to think about a time where that was introduced and we couldn't wait for it. So let's jump right into the next update, 1.5, which was Cupcake. Now, if you followed Android history, you know that they tend to go with platform releases. They name them after something sweet. And, you know, people originally thought they were kind of like desserts, but it's more of like a general sweet thing. But if you wondered why there's no A or B, I believe that's probably alpha and beta releases, or, yeah, you know, just something that wasn't polished enough to put out. And I know that by having some of these devices for the first year or two, it was almost like we were a beta test audience.
It was.
Like, you put up with things. If you had a different device, you know, the software updates seem to be, you know, we'll talk here about major ones, like key monumental ones, but along the way you would have like a 0.1 or a 0.1.1 release that would address certain features.
Yes. And there were a lot of updates coming very quickly to fix a lot of those problems in those early days, those first few years. It was moving at an expedient rate
Keep up. At the time, there were only a few devices, so we knew that they were device-specific updates.
That's right, yeah.
If you followed the update or saw that, or if your device received it, not all devices got it, but some things were specifically designed to address this device in the way it handled a certain thing. So 1.5, this was released April 2009, and it added, I think probably the most exciting thing for me was widgets. And this was different than just having a shortcut to an app on your screen. You know, we liked it, we could rearrange things and put them where we wanted to. Mm-hmm. But widgets were completely different. And if you wanted a clock, a digital clock, an analog clock, or something big that you wanted to put on your screen, that's what a widget is. And a lot of applications now, you know, they feature these unique shortcuts, you know, directly to a link on an app or a file on Google Drive or on Google Maps if you wanted to see the location of somebody. These are, you know, these are widgets, and these are the things that kind of started out as, you know, a music player that you can visually see what song was playing on your home screen, and you can adjust the song and go to the next one. So widgets were really exciting.
It was, and it added the interactivity of the phone. You know, really to not have to open up the application itself to make changes or to write pause, play music, to make a phone call to somebody. It really cut down the number of clicks or presses, taps to get into something, which it was a really revolutionary thing at the time.
Right.
And it took a long time for other, you know, OSs and for people to be able to catch up with that type of technology.
Well, and for me, I think what I really liked about it is it gave me the ability to make my device uniquely mine. So you pick it up and it feels like what you want. You see what you want. So widgets, big deal. Yeah. What else came about with Cupcake?
So Cupcake also had the ability to upload to YouTube, which is amazing at the time. In Picasa, before Google Photos and all that, that was Google's photo editing and storage platform.
Right.
And you at this time were able to upload any of your videos that you made from your phone with that display to YouTube, which was incredible. And of course now we can live stream YouTube and Facebook and whatever else, but to be able to do this in 2009 was absolutely incredible, to be able to take something mobile video and to take it out wherever you were and be able to upload it.
Yeah, these weren't high-definition videos by any stretch of the imagination. They weren't even close to that. But the just the concept of I just recorded
720p.
That, yeah, I just recorded that video of you playing, you know, in the backyard with the kids, and now it's on YouTube. Like, mind-boggling.
Yes. I may have been wrong on that.
I think 720 came about later.
It did. That was the next iteration of the HTC phones. This just says video, yes.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I know, you know, 640 by 480 and some of these, like, low resolution. But it was the best of, you know, what was available. There weren't really any, there was no other way to get YouTube videos that quick, push them online. We also saw copy and paste in the browser, which was kind of interesting. That something that we, you know, today we long press and we copy, we paste something, you know, to search, or if we want to copy and highlight and paste it into an email. Like, that was just something that, you know, until then you couldn't do. Let's jump forward a few more months to 1.6, which was Donut. And so this was September 2009, so about a year after the first phone, and started to kind of hit its stride. We're just about to see things really change. This is a few devices on the market. Now one of the things that we have to do is we have to change the platform so that you can support different screen sizes. That's a big deal.
That is a big deal. Like, right. Hardware vendors coming out to make phones both with a wider screen, a more narrow screen, different aspect ratios, but the OS was originally designed for the G1.
Right.
And there had to be an adaptation available so these other devices would be able to come out and have more compatibility.
Mm-hmm. And getting back to the point earlier, some of these things were baked in by the hardware vendor, and they went around and said, okay, we're going to kind of change these things. It's open source code, so we're going to adopt and adapt, and we're going to make it so that our device works anyways. But these are things that were rolled into Android so that other companies don't have to worry about it. So what else did we get with 1.6?
Well, we were also able to start using the Android market to sort between your paid and free apps. Because before, everything was free, because that payment system really wasn't put in place yet. Mm-hmm. To be able to have paid apps, to have the whole checkout process and everything else. So this was now an opportunity for developers to monetize off their applications.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, it was a completely different mindset for people to, you know, they went a year or so and were doing these apps that were free, and everybody was just, you know, let's just throw different things out there and make it. But now if you come out and say, hey, wait a second, we get 1 million users, or we get 500,000, and these people spend $1 on this, you know, we can start to make some serious money off of that. And Google started, you know, they took like a 30% share of that. But if you could get out there and you realize that Android, you know, was no longer this wait and see if other companies get into it and other carriers get into it, if they start to really, you know, flock to the platform, you know, it's a really big audience. And we know now, like, there's billions of devices, millions of applications, right. You know, so it's a different world today. But this was, you know, a decade ago, that, you know, less than 10 years ago, that you couldn't even get an app that you paid for, you know, so definitely take that for granted.
Yeah.
Let's jump just a little bit further. Now we're into October 2009 and Android 2.0 and 2.1, which followed closely after. And keep in mind, there are some small updates that come along the way, but this was huge. This was the arrival of the Droid from Verizon and Motorola. That was a big deal.
That was a big deal. Droid changed the way Android was perceived in the market. Because, at least in the U.S., mm-hmm. Verizon is the most popular carrier. While T-Mobile had the G1, the first Android mm-hmm. phone to come out, their place in the market was much lower. And so, because there were other carriers at the time. So it really didn't hit the population the same way. But once the CDMA availability was there and you had Verizon backing it, they marketed this thing as a droid, and it made a huge difference in the branding and the understanding and position of Android was really coming to light.
Mm-hmm. Well, their ad campaign was everything your phone can't do, Droid can.
That's right, Droid does.
Droid does. And the iPhone, the commercial was actually a take on, it was like a riff on the way Apple was running their commercials for the iPhone. But then we realized, wait a second, there's a lot of things that you can't do with that phone. There's a lot of limitation. And by Verizon and Motorola coming out with the Droid, there were a lot of things that people, you know, it was a huge campaign, so people, there was an awareness. And almost to the point where it hurt Android because they conflated Android with Droid, which is whatever.
Right, got it out there.
Yeah, but it really did bring some things that other phones couldn't do, like the G1 and HTC, the Droid, well, Motorola Droid, and then HTC had some phones for Sprint at the time too. The Legend. There were other devices that were out there, but the Droid does. And some of those things were Microsoft Exchange support,
which is huge for business. I mean, the devices were not going to get into business without Exchange adoption.
Right.
Because at the time, there was no G Suite. I don't think Google Apps lived at that time. Right. And, I mean, Gmail just came out, you know, a couple years before. So this is very early stages, but to be able to get adoption into business, Exchange support had to come out. And that's really what allowed that to happen, mm-hmm. as well as the Google Maps navigation coming out with this version.
That was a game changer.
That was huge.
For turn-by-turn directions. It was cloud-based maps. Nowhere near as polished as it is today or feature-rich, but just the idea that you can put in A to B and have your phone give you turn-by-turn navigation on a device that you didn't have to buy a Garmin, you didn't have to have something integrated into your phone or your car dashboard. It was all on your phone. Voice to text, this is where we started to see the ability to talk to your phone and have it convert to text and transcribe, basically. So we had seen that in computers, but to see that in a phone, big deal.
It is. Have it wherever you go, mm-hmm. and it's available. It's very nice.
Live wallpapers is something else that came about at this time, and that really kind of kicked off with, I think, the Nexus 1. So this is a few months after the Droid, but right around then, we're talking fall, winter, 2009 into 2010, live wallpapers, instead of having a static background, you had something that could move. It was like a screensaver of sorts. Animated pictures, and there were a few that were kind of rolled out with every device, but really, today's phones, I mean, we take it for granted that everything moves a little bit or has some, you know, the Pixel phones have these living wallpapers that move just ever so subtle. It was a big deal that you could pick up your phone and see, like, what is that moving? Like, yeah, that's my background. Like, oh, that's cool.
It was really cool.
If you wanted a clock or some kind of dynamic-looking thing that just continually moved or updated or bounced around the screen. So that was late 2010. Let's jump about 6 months or so into May 2000. Well, that was 2009, I should say, December. Now we're into May of 2010, and we're at 2.2, Froyo, and this was right around a time where Apple was getting pretty vocal about what they weren't going to support in terms of, like, the Adobe Flash, you know, in the browser.
Right.
Steve Jobs had, you know, come out and said, well, we won't support that. But at the time, it was a standard. A lot of websites relied on that.
Not like it is
now. Right.
I mean, it has died, and it should have died.
Sure.
But the But right, the so much of the web and other applications relied on Flash to run. Mm-hmm. And so even though you had a full HTML browser, which was much better than the phones before iPhone and Android, iOS and Android, this really is what allowed the full web to be available in your pocket that nobody else has ever done before.
Right, and that was a huge selling point. It was kind of like a sick burn, you know, when they announced it, like right away afterwards, Google said, hey, we're building it right into our platform. We're going to make it so that you have the full web. Now, this is before websites were mobile optimized and things, you know, Flash was heavy and clunky, especially on a mobile device. And networks, you know, we're still in a 3G era. This is before things were rendering quickly, instantly over, you know, 4G, even Wi-Fi, like home networks, they weren't really that fast. So it was a big deal, no longer quite a big deal, but it was, you know, 2010. We also started to see the introduction of being able to use your phone as a mobile hotspot. It's kind of surreal to think of a time where you couldn't do that. You know, a lot of people have devices that they... Hey, let me, you know, connect my phone to yours. Let me hotspot off you and go somewhere and share a connection with somebody. Hotspot mobile tethering at a platform level, mind-blowing.
It was. I mean, and data was really just coming out, right? Being 3G, it was just becoming fast enough to be quasi-usable on a computer. But then even after this, there were further limitations based off the carrier.
Right.
So once this became available at a platform level for Android, some of the carriers wanted you to pay an extra $20 a month just for the privilege.
Just to turn it on.
Just to turn it on.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, to think like with the steps and the hoops that these carriers would jump through to just trying to monetize a little bit more this time was almost embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to prevent their users from using their own, you know, network.
Right. What else did we get with Froyo?
They had the performance updates.
Really started to focus on
that. That was really big. Ways to really look at the improved performance.
Web browsing and just general computer, you know, power performance, processors, memory. Things started to, you know, you would get the way Android was written was almost changed.
Mm-hmm.
Dalvik, the just-in-time compiler, they looked at that, and this is getting more into the technical side of things, but this is where Android was, you know, you kind of scrap it a little bit and step back and say, hey, let's improve things, you know, across the board and stop relying on these processors to do these things, because we still had Texas Instruments, we had Qualcomm, and they were, you know, there were different companies creating things, so there wasn't a lot of standardization at the time. So when you do it at the platform level and you say, hey, we're going to change the way Android works, then you can kind of leverage, you know, these faster processors. You know, at a certain point, you couldn't even, you know, we're jumping ahead here another release or two, but these were still Snapdragon processors, 1 gigahertz. Like, that was crazy at the time, but these were still single CPU.
Single core
CPU. So you have to kind of squeeze the most out of what you can get. You know,
people really did.
And gaming, people were starting to look at this and say, well, wait a second, I can actually play some pretty decent games on a device that I carry around in my pocket.
Yeah.
So that was May 2010. We'll jump up to Gingerbread in December. That was 2.3. And interestingly enough, you know, in the first couple of years, we saw major names and release candidates, but they were 2.2, 2.3. It's not until later that we start to see full-on 5,
major
6, 7, right?
Version releases.
So Gingerbread, a couple of big things for that one were near-field communication. What do we use that for today?
Mobile payments.
Right.
Without that, we wouldn't even have the Google Wallet or Google Pay,
right.
You know, Apple Pay. I mean, it took Apple a long time to really get that available in their hardware, but to be able to have at the time they had Android Pay, and even from your watch, you can do that now.
Yeah.
And so that NFC was enabled at this point of the platform in 2010, but while it may not be a front-facing item, the technology has really changed the way that we live.
And looking back, you know, that seems longer ago to me than Android 1.0, 1.5. Like, some of the stuff feels like, oh, man, I've relied on this longer, and I've used it more, and I maybe take for granted more some of this stuff. But, yeah, it wasn't until the end of 2010 that that was a sweeping change to Android. We had seen it in other devices. People had put those sensors and software into their phones, but not until Gingerbread did they do that. Copy and paste was also improved. That's something that, you know, on a mobile device, it used to suck, man.
It really
to try to get something that you were trying to just copy an address and paste it into something else, and to pull out something from an email and share that to Facebook, and or to cop, like, it was just, yeah. So that was a big deal. That was one of the key features of Gingerbread. And then maybe 2 months later, we jumped to a full release, and we saw Android 3.0, Honeycomb. And that was largely centered around what kind of technology?
Our tablets.
Right.
Tablets were finally coming into play at this point. And to really look at Android for these larger screens, to be able to take advantage of the screen size that you would have versus these little 3.2, 3.5, 3.7-inch phones,
mm-hmm.
you could have a full 7 or 10-inch display. And so how would you do notifications? How do you do your app launcher? What type of widgets can you do? What's your grid going to look like in terms of how many icons or shortcuts will be on your screen? All these items were really looked into and thought about and developed for or within 3.0 Honeycomb.
There had been some tablets prior to the platform, the update, but it was taking that mobile phone experience and just stretching it.
Right.
It was so gross.
It was. It was usable, but it didn't look good.
Yeah. You would have things that would stretch and not reach the full screen, or would have just a weird aspect ratio because of different sizes. And
you know, you think about, I mean, this happened, I mean, this is fixed now, but when you would run a phone app on a tablet, and you could actually choose in the application to run it as a phone app still, and there'd be the big black box around it.
Yeah.
But that was the only option, because without having that at that level,
yep.
the developers didn't really have that framework to be able to develop for the right size, right?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Right? So you can run it really small. It just stretches.
Yeah,
it
you looks could. You have a 7-inch screen, but you're still going to run something that only fits in the inside of that with this huge black matte frame around it. Yeah, so Honeycomb was really revolutionary and started to work on adaptive sizes. So you can get to 7, 10-inch, and, you know, then we saw 10.1 and 8. And,
right, and then getting to these larger sizes, we knew we were going to have a larger batteries.
Right.
So you're going to have more battery life, which also gave you a little bit more room under the hood for multi-core CPU support.
Yes.
Came out in this. And so as these processors were advancing on the Qualcomm side, the multi-core support came, so it's going to give you better battery life, better performance, and we were able to better develop applications to utilize that to keep things snappy.
The Motorola Zoom was a big deal because it had the 3.0, but it had a dual core processor. It was like a big deal. Like, when I still have one of these, and I will occasionally boot it up. It's a big heavy thing, but it, when it loads up, it has a splash screen. It says dual core on it, so it lets you know. You know, today we have octa-core and hexa-core, like, it's crazy, but that was something that, you know, you had to kind of consider, hey, a lot of companies are starting to do different things. We need to make it easier. So they built that into it. Settings and soft keys for navigation, because tablets didn't have hard buttons on them like phones did for back and home. And so that's where we saw, you know, 2011 started to change, you know, let's go with virtual keys so that you can navigate to get to your recent apps and to go home and things like that.
And it's funny to think Qualcomm was founded only in 2007. So they really got this ride off of Android, and it made them a powerhouse of an organization, of a company.
Well, it feels like they've been around forever, right?
It does.
Like, it just seems like they're an institutional brand.
Right, they are, and they're in everything. And right, when you said, like, TI was really starting this, and Qualcomm saw that opportunity and yep. went in and grabbed it.
So that was 3.0. Let's go now towards the end of the year, so we'll jump up to October. And this is Android 4.0 Ice Cream Sandwich. And we saw a starting to get into less, you know, the first few years of Android, it was features after features after, you know, we can do this and you can now, you know, take advantage of that. And there were a lot of technical things that were getting added. And we started to hear, no, it's great, but it's not really polished. It's not quite as user-friendly as what you can get from iOS. And Ice Cream Sandwich started to not necessarily slow down on the features and hitting you over the head with things, but started to get a little bit more user delight and getting into more like, oh, this is, I get more control over my device and I have a better understanding of my device. And so we saw things like being able to put folders on your home screen, view your data usage. That's powerful information.
It is.
You know, if you only have a 2 gigabyte plan, or if you have a family plan and you're sharing 5 gigabytes at the time, you want to see, hey, Facebook is chewing it up, or I'm watching YouTube videos now on my phone regularly to see that data being used. It's
yeah, well, and because I mean, this introduced the 1080p video recording,
right?
And so your data usage could really go up from, yeah, you know, what was available before. And video uses more data than anything.
Well, and if you're uploading to YouTube,
right,
you know, you're shooting video right there and putting it online or sharing with people, that 1080p was a lot bigger file than what you were getting before.
Yeah.
We also saw things like Android Beam, which kind of leveraged the NFC, where you want to tap and share a file with somebody. It was a big focus on that, being able to share a contact or a picture. We don't really do that today, but it was, right, you know, kind of a key feature. And then something else we take kind of for granted, automatic syncing of your Chrome bookmarks to get on one device and see where you know, what your favorites are without having to create a completely different set or export and import. And, you know, this is where Google started to kind of really tie things to your account.
Yeah.
And make things more like, hey, we know who you are and what you're doing with your device. You know, we have a sense of what kind of information you're going to seek, you're going to use. And that kind of pushes forward into the next release, which is Jelly Bean 4.1. And that's in July 2012. And that's where Google Now kind of, you know, built off of that, you know, we know you, we know your account, we have an idea of what you're going to look up. We know, you know, it was getting to be instant results for things.
Yes.
And Google Now was kind of like, you know, we have today on our smart displays and Google Home, Google Home Hub, and all of these things where Google basically is your digital assistant. And Google, yeah, Now was kind of the groundwork for go in there and see, oh, here's the weather, without you having to look up the weather.
Yeah, Google Now took what you wanted, your location, and would look up your news, your calendar. It would bring all that stuff into one place, very similar to the assistant now. It's an kind of an option under the assistant. But Jelly Bean had that available within there, which was great for mobile because that's where you did so much of your quick searching. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot better data there. And this is where, which I always just liked it because it sounded funny, was Project Butter. And to give you that buttery, smooth quickness.
Right.
But they Google continued to develop under the hood. Mm-hmm. And this was a huge change in some of their architecture to be able to speed up the device and really make it quick and easy, which allowed one of the other features, the actionable notifications.
Right.
So now it wasn't just a static notification to tell you what was happening, what was going on, but you could do something with it. You could respond, you could reply. You can say, I want to, you know, not just get rid of this notification, but, you know, I want to click on this and, you know, mm-hmm. give some make an action off of that.
So that's, you know, we're 4 years into Android devices basically. And up until then, you couldn't really, you'd get a text and you had to open up your message app and reply. But now you can actually, from your dropdown, reply to somebody. Hey, I'll be there in a few minutes, you know.
Right.
Where are you? I'm on my way. You know, those things you can shoot from in your notification bar. Tablets, we were still, you know, tablets were still kind of a big deal at the time. So we saw multiple user accounts. So you could actually, if you had a shared tablet in the house, that you could have your stuff and then you can log out or share a different login for your kids, your spouse, coworker. Like you can create support for multiple users. And then one of the things that isn't necessarily something we use too often, but this is where we saw the beginning of, like today, when you put your Pixel on the Pixel stand, you've got, you know, it starts to pull up your pictures or your ambient display. You know, at the time, they called it Daydream. And right. That was your, almost like a screensaver.
It was. Yeah, there was some options by having a screensaver on there, some other very minimal notifications, but it kind of took your device and, hey, I'm going to dock this item. And so now I'm just going to have my clock show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have it, so I'm not really putting this to a phone mode. It's going to sit in this dock. It's going to charge. And it kind of gave you just a different experience from your regular phone. But it was a start, and it was a start and an idea to be able to start doing something different with your device in that state.
Right. Moving on to 4.4 KitKat. This was really, I would say, one of the bigger things that we use today rolled out was the ability to prompt your device to take action by saying those magic words. And we've got different devices here in the office, so if we say it, it's probably going to wake things up. But this is when we got OK Google. Yeah, and there goes everything, even the Pixel Book. Okay, so this is where you could ask your phone things by literally asking it.
Right.
Instead of pulling up the search bar or going to the browser or doing it, you know, pulling up your contacts, you could ask it to do things. The design got a little bit more immersive so that when you would open an app, it might show you the full screen, get rid of the notification bar, and kind of expand to full so that you didn't have, you know, if you had soft keys, give you a little bit more real estate.
Yeah, it was really nice. And having a wireless printing capability, I know on my side, this was actually a really big item for me on kind of the business side of printing, because you wanted to be able to have the ability to print from a mobile device directly to a printer. Mm-hmm. And there were some manufacturers who started making this much easier. And it was huge because a lot of folks, you would have just your device and you want to be able to print from there, whatever you had on there to print from it. And being able to have a wireless printing capability, while now, big deal, you share it and you share it to your printer and it goes out. Right. It is really easy. This was the very first steps. And that really made a big difference.
Right. We also have, we start to see the first support for wearables. You know, this is 2013, so it seems like forever ago, but that's when we started to get into the idea of like, hey, Google Glass has kind of gone away, and now we're going to switch, you know, focus to something you can wear on your wrist, and now you're going to have Android capabilities, Google capabilities on your wrist. So we still saw support for that on wearables. Moving basically a year from then, we move up to Android 5.0, and this is where material design came about. They came up with design standards or guidelines, not just for the platform getting a UI refresh, but for other developers. Huge.
I remember watching this at Google I.O., and I legitimately remember him, Sunar, talking about the material design, and I was so excited and so happy because this was one thing that I felt, as somebody who just loves Android, that iOS had a standard on their software for their developers, and everybody could see what that software looked like, right? And so having Material Design said, we're going to create a look for Android. We're going to create a design, a palette that's going to make Android look like who it is and what it is. And to know that that was going to be easily replicated and mm-hmm. it looked good.
Right. And it gave you the ability to kind of say, hey, if you're a developer and you want to create something, use our protocol, use our tools, and then let us decide the colors for you. Let us, you know, use our palette. These are things that if you don't have colors that you're using or branding or anything, this is where the menu should be. This is where you should go for, you know, make it so that people felt it was intuitive. And it was the first time where Android actually felt like, oh, YouTube feels the same as Gmail and feels the same as Maps. Right. And like, you know, you started to kind of feel like a little bit more cohesion. We also saw updates for, obviously, you know, battery. It's always been a focus.
Yes.
Battery has always been, could always be better, could last longer, charge quicker. But we started to see that built into the platform to say, hey, you know, we can go into lower power modes. We can go into things that let you, you know, get more out of your phone. And that rolls into the next one with Android 6, almost a year later, October 15, doze mode. Let your phone basically go to sleep. You know, things that don't have to run in the background don't run in the background. And really, you started to get more out of your battery just by having that version of Android.
Yeah.
We also saw with Android 6.0, this is Marshmallow, the platform integration of fingerprint reading sensors. We saw them in devices.
Right. It's like Samsung had that device, they wrote the software, they put it in, this was available to the platform that any other manufacturer can use mm-hmm. that technology for their devices.
And now it's a security standard. It's
right.
Like you don't even think about it when you're setting up your phone to go in and put your fingerprint in there.
It's part of it.
Multiple fingerprints. That's where they said, hey, we're going to simplify this and make it so that it's platform ready.
And with that security, this is when they also added the permissions only when needed.
Yes.
Instead of the all or nothing app, like I want to download this app. Okay, install. You had to read about the permission separately.
And it was, yeah, you had to read it before you did it. You had to go through, and it was scary.
Scary, and it was all or nothing.
Right, so like, oh, I want this app, but why does it need to see my camera? Why does it need my location? This is just a text messaging app or a keyboard skin or something. Like, I don't want that. So at this time, with Marshmallow, it prompts you as those permissions are needed. So if you go into an app, you install it, the first time you go in to use a feature that says, hey, we want to use your camera. Oh, this camera is going to take pictures so that you can upload a profile pic. Or, yeah. You know, okay, so you know what? I don't want the camera. Or I don't want to share my GPS location. I don't think that this calculator needs to know my GPS. Like,
right.
It really kind of exposed apps, for, you know, if they were malicious. Yeah. But it gave users more, like, control and peace of mind. And that's something that we started to see Android do, Google do with user delight, peace of mind. We started to go into things like, let's jump into Android 7.
Yeah.
And if it feels like we're moving quicker with these updates from one to the next. And that we are, because they're not so API rich and feature rich. Yeah. Granted, there's a lot of stuff that
they made a lot of changes, and not right to belittle the major software revisions, but we are getting to a time in 2015-16 where Android is really matured,
right?
And it's really become the underpinnings of the software is great, it's solid,
right?
And so now the differences are. The updates are very, very different in terms of form and feature than they have been since the beginning.
More cosmetic, more control, more information. That's the type of stuff that, you know, you could actually point to and say, well, what's the difference? Well, it does this and does that. Like, oh, so now we're talking about, you know, Android 7 2016, you have bundled notifications that you can go in and see, oh, I have six text messages. Instead of seeing six separate messages, you could see that it would say six messages or apps that need updated. Little things to kind of clean up and get rid of the clutter. Daydream VR, this is right at the time when Google introduced the Pixel phone or Pixel line of phones. So we started to go from Google Cardboard and VR. So now you're looking at the ability to, you know, get into VR games and movies and things without having to spend hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars and be a developer to play with Oculus. And right. You can actually just put your phone in there, sit back and watch YouTube, you know, wherever. Yeah. VR is kind of, it's everywhere today. But, you know, just a few years ago, it was kind of like, hey, we need to kind of standardize that. So that was 2016, August. And then we move about a year later to Android 8.0. And this starts to get a little bit more polish again. And you saw things like picture-in-picture. So now if you have Google Maps or if you have Hangouts, you can kind of minimize that and it can keep running. You kind of, you know, that's only a couple of years old.
Right, but it is. Right, and I don't even think about it because I use Maps most of the time, every time I drive, just because of construction or accidents, traffic live updates. Mm-hmm. But also within like a later version of Maps is Google Music is in there. So you can play your music from within apps. So you have these subsections of these windows mm-hmm. that have progressed since then. But this is what made all of that start and make it possible.
Now, some of these features that we're talking about, too, we're into Android 8. As of today, and this is February 2019, you know, that version of Android, you know, still accounts for 21% of the market. And the stuff that we talked about, the 7.0, the Nougat, that's, you know, that's 28%. That's a majority of the devices. Those two account for 50% of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. Really important to keep in mind that most folks, that this is what we're seeing, mm-hmm. are these updates and these items and maybe some of the stuff we're talking about now and soon, a lot of people don't see yet.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, security updates and patches and fixes and things are important, but not so much of, hey, I need Android 8 because it has this. Like, now it's user delight. Now it's something where people are saying, oh, that would be really nice.
Or, it is, right. Android, like, instant apps. Yeah, it's happened. I've used it, mm-hmm. you know, because it was available. But it's not anything that's going to change my life. It's not anything that's like, oh, man, I'm so glad that's available now.
Right.
And they're neat. But, yeah, it's not the same. Now, the Google Play Protect, I do appreciate that.
Right.
To look at and scan all of my apps on my device before they're downloaded to make sure they're safe.
And even if they're outside of the Google Play Store, constantly run and check, make sure that what you have is safe. Autofill login. Now, this is one that I kind of like. And if you haven't had this and mm-hmm. don't have Android 8 or later, and keep in mind, a lot of people don't even know what version of Android they have on their phone.
Right.
Sure, there's a huge vocal group of people who care so much about software updates and features, but there are people who may not even understand that their phone can get an update. But autofill for login, if you have this on your phone, it's really nice. It's kind of like you know, Chrome keeps track of your usernames and passwords. You can have this so that, like, if you log into, say, Twitter or PayPal on your phone, it keeps those credentials so that you can actually hop from phone to phone. And it keeps that, you know, hey, we know you've set up a new device, but now you don't have to remember your password. Like, we can keep track of that stuff. Updates, Project Treble, that's where we start to get the promise of quicker updates. And keep in mind, too, Google is starting to seed out these developer previews and early looks of their software prior to these formal announcements. So companies have the ability to go in, developers and OEMs, to kind of play with the software before it's officially announced. That's different than the way it was years ago, where it was just, hey, it's ready, it's out there, deal with it. get your software, get your updates. And that's where people would complain, well, I've got the Galaxy S3 on Sprint and I don't have my update. Well, I've got it on T-Mobile and I do have it. Well, what's the difference? And like, that's a whole mess. But this kind of is a big step towards faster and easier software updates.
It is. And what is one of the items I see here as a feature is adaptive icons?
Yeah.
I'm honestly not sure what that is.
So it's a pure cosmetic thing.
Okay.
When you look at your phone, your icons, some of them are circular, some of them are square, some of them are ovals. Some of them, there's a teardrop one on your Pixel phone. What it does is it will give the developer, it will make it a circle for you if you have all circles. If you have it set up to be squares, it will adapt the icon so that you have a more consistent UI when you open your app drawer. So purely cosmetic. But
it makes it look... that makes sense. I remember the apps could look, without a right theme,
right,
could look totally different based off of the developer because how the app itself was made.
So I'm showing you mine. I've got the teardrop looking shape to mine and see how they all have the same.
Yes.
And it takes advantage of. Yeah. So that's the adaptive. It's kind of cool. I'll show you where to change that on your phone here after we finish recording.
Thank you.
So that's 8. Now we're up to Android 9, which is the most current version of Android. And that is Pi. And that came out officially last year, August 2018. And that brings about a lot more user control information and user delight. So things like automatically adjusting your brightness, automatically adjusting your battery, automatically knowing what you're probably going to do with your phone. When you open up the app tray, it's got the apps that you're most likely to use at that time.
I love that. I know it's stupid and it's small, but I know most of the time if I'm out or a certain time of day and I pull up from the bottom, it is pulling the app that I'm probably going to use.
Yep.
And I have paid attention in other parts of the day. It is not there.
Yeah.
I just think it's incredible.
Mine shows Starbucks every morning because it knows
right
that I'm likely to order.
I didn't want to say that, but that's what mine does too.
It's
great.
It's okay. But yeah, it'll also know, you know, like with your app slices and app actions. So it'll know like, hey, let's just do a quick Uber ride to get home. Or it'll automatically know, hey, you're probably about to text your wife about this time of day. You tend to have conversations. So you'll see these things in your app tray when you open it up. It's like, hey, how did you know that I'm going to probably navigate home from here?
Right. Every evening for my smart lights, a lot of times I'll change the brightness or the colors.
Uh-huh.
And it's always there in the evening.
Same here. Mine tends to open up IMDb because I love to read trivia and news and things for movies. That pulls up at the end of the day. It's always got Pokemon Go for me. When I go in to pull up at the end of the night, I tend to keep an eye on my Wi-Fi because I have a teen son who likes to stay on his phone late at night. So I'll go in there and I'll see, you know, it'll pull up the controls for my Wi-Fi. So a lot of little things that pull up right in there. So it's Google knowing you. It takes that assistant one step further of, hey, man, this is somebody who knows me better than I know myself.
Right. And they took that a step further with digital well-being.
Right.
That, I feel, is just a good move for any of these large companies to be able to say, yes, you use your device all the time. It's easy to use it. But we're going to not only give you an option to tell you how often you're using it, but to pause that app each day after so much usage so you can get away from maybe being on social media or whatever too often, too long.
To set restrictions or to know, just to purely know, wow, I spent an hour and a half on Reddit on my phone. Like, what did I do today?
Right.
Or, you know, man, I play this game way more than I thought. Or I need to set some restrictions or just to really think about what I'm doing with my phone. Just because I have this thing doesn't mean I have to use it. Wow, how many times a day did I open my phone to check notifications?
Yes.
These are little things that they've almost gone 180 degrees in the wrong direction. And just because you can doesn't mean you have to. And, you know, at dinner time we have kind of a soft rule of no phones at the table. And I try to do a thing where no phones at a certain point when I go to bed at night.
Right.
And but it's hard. But if you start to set these things up and change the way you look at your life, you get into these habits. And that's, again, that's knowledge and that's power. So that's kind of where we are today is with Android 9. That's more of a polish, very, very cohesive, especially if you have a stock Android. You know, and that's a different discussion. Right. But if you have the things set up the way Google intends, the latest and greatest of what your phone can and should do, it's really much improved over the years. And if you kind of come and go with your Android phones and dance back and forth between iPhone and iOS, you know, Android and iOS, it's always refreshing to hear people come back every couple of cycles or every generation or two and say, wow, I really like this, or this is really cool, and I this wasn't here the last time I had my phone. And so it's really important to get these updates. And if your phone has them, obviously try to, you know, search for them, install them. It's a completely different podcast to talk about why some people don't like updates and what happens with them and whatever. But if you have the chance to try out some of these features, definitely. And you can go to android.com and check out history to see some of these things we talked about. And you can also go to, you know, Wikipedia. You can do Google searches. You'll find tons of websites that will tell you some of the favorite features or some of the hidden gems and things that, you know, come with each of these releases. And it's a fun trip to go through memory lane, to, you know, to go down this rabbit hole with you.
It is.
It's kind of surreal sometimes to think about things that we couldn't do or didn't know were coming. But it's been fun to kind of go with this and now realize, oh man, I can't go back to, you know, if I had to, I wouldn't go back to anything older than 6.0 or 7.0. Like, there's certain things that I really rely on, you know, that have only been around a couple of years. John, anything else you wanted to add to that before we wrap it up?
Taking the time to look through this is really exciting, and it makes me remember how much better Android has become. And obviously, yeah, I mean, it's the largest ecosystem in the world, and, you know, it's hard now to say, well, now it's the biggest and arguably, you know, a better platform for most people. It was fun when you would see all these changes, but it also is exciting to see where we're going to go next with the later versions, and if Google is going to stick at 10, mm-hmm. or if they're going to keep going down through the alphabet, and, you know, what it looks like next.
Yeah.
You know, after that, like, you know, what are the changes going to be made, and how is the AI going to really make a difference? I think those are going to be fun things to see in the future.
Well, and that's a lot of the stuff that as they rolled it out, you look back and say, oh yeah, that wasn't something I ever thought about that I needed. So it's kind of hard to guess what I don't need today, but I'll be really happy to use a year from now or 2 years from now. Some of that stuff, you know, the hardware is outpacing needs. It's how do we do the experience? You know, pretty much any mid-range phone is going to get through almost everybody. A lot of people want flagship phones, but a bigger swath of users are content with entry-level mid-range phones. And that's where you're going to find some of the software updates and some of the things, you know, the Android 6, 7, 8, still floating around out there. But as we've seen, the updates are getting better, less crucial to have them. So it's okay to stay with that, as long as you're getting your software updates for security fixes and malware and Google Play Protect and things like that that kind of watch your back for you. But I'm anxious to see what happens with 10 and beyond.
All right. Well, thanks for chatting.
Yeah, dude, this was interesting to go down 10 years worth of software updates and major releases. So that's going to wrap it up, I think. For John and myself, I want to thank you for listening. If you have anything feedback-wise that you want to submit to us, feel free to email us at podcast@androidguys.com. We appreciate you listening. If you haven't had a chance, subscribe, and that would be anywhere you normally listen to your shows. Could be Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, Pocket Casts, wherever. We would appreciate that you subscribe and share us. If you found us at all interesting or fun or informative, let somebody know about it. We would appreciate it. See you guys.
See ya.